and welcome to Come and Play, a geeky, kinky podcast. Come and Play explores all things sex toys, kink, feminism, geek life, and gaming culture. I'm Elia Winters.
And I'm Kismet Scribbles.
And we're happy to be back with you today. Look at us, four episodes in a row.
Going strong.
How many episodes do you think before we'll stop calling attention to the fact that we're successfully recording episodes?
I think as long as we're still successfully recording episodes, so you should just buckle up and prepare yourself for that every episode.
It's important to congratulate yourself at regular intervals.
It's the small wins.
And this is a small win. We're continuing to meet in person. That's very exciting. We set up some allowances in case we wanted to meet remotely, but so far, we're not doing it. All right, this episode is scheduled to air in the middle of October. We are at the cusp of a wonderful season here in New England. It's basic bitch season and we're basic bitches.
Absolutely. We are coming into our full basicness. It's starting to be a little less hot every single day. It's starting to have some cool mornings and the spooky bitch in me is waking up hardcore.
Tell me how you've been living your best autumnal bitch life as we roll into fall 2021.
Well, for one thing, I am completely revamping my Halloween aesthetics this year.
There's a few things I want to call attention to in that sentence. One, that you have had a previous Halloween aesthetic enough that it is meriting a revamp, and that you are consciously choosing a new one to suit your changing styles.
Well, my aesthetic previously was picking the bones of Joann's Fabrics Halloween session once everything's like 80% off the day after Halloween, which doesn't make for much of an aesthetic.
Well, it creates an aesthetic, and that aesthetic is cheap. I'm kidding.
You're not entirely wrong. It's some of it is, I love all my decorations dearly, but I find more and more that I was like not using a lot of them because it would be okay. I don't know where to put this because it's completely different from every other goddamn thing that I have in this box. So I decided this year that I would actually spend the money to buy Halloween decorations during the season. That way I could get some of the stuff that I wanted. Because Michael's Halloween decorations this year are just fantastic. If you are into any sort of witchy or kind of a gothic vibe, their Halloween decorations are fantastic this year. And it's in colors and styles that you wouldn't necessarily think of. There's a lot of jewel tones and things like that. So I decided that I really wanted to actually go ahead and get some of the stuff this year before it's completely gone. And that kind of snowballed.
We went shopping for some decorations, you and I, last week. Was it last week?
I think so.
And Michael's was just picked clean. I think what we're seeing is that other people like us are just hunting down any forms of seasonal serotonin that they can get after the hellscape of the last 18 months. So that looks like really good Halloween decorations.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And coupled with all of the supply issues that we're running into in various areas of manufacturing, it's kind of coming up all over the place. I think places are getting less, and when they do get them, people are going in and just going ham and picking over everything. But I'm finding that apparently spooky bitch shopping season starts far earlier than I ever realized.
There's a serious overlap between back to school and spooky bitch shopping season. I mean, it's always spooky bitch shopping season when we're shopping. But the times where you can actually find the good Halloween decorations, it does start earlier than I'm aesthetically ready to look.
Yeah. See, I'm that person that once we hit about mid-July, I start getting the, I'm fucking done with this. Actually, earlier than that, I think after 4th of July, I'm like, all right, I've been patriotic. It's time for fucking pumpkins.
You have a tolerance of summer that extends to, I think, one sunny day where you go to the beach and one time where you could sit outside in shorts. And then you're like, when is this awful season going to end?
I think you're absolutely right. It should be noted also that I am basically the color of a piece of paper.
It's true.
So my tolerance for being out in the sun in any capacity is just nothing.
If you've ever watched classic silent film era vampire movies, where the pasty white creature emerges from the shadow into the sunlight, hisses, starts to light on fire, and then runs back inside, that's an experience with Kismet.
Exactly. Just imagine Nosferatu in a sunflower sundress, and that's pretty much what happens the first time I go out during the summer.
Heavy sunglasses, a big hat, a general expression of displeasure. I saw a tweet. I've seen this a few different places, Twitter and Tumblr, because they all recycle the same ideas. But the gist is that, hot take, summer is a garbage season and we're only conditioned to like it because it was our only vacation.
Right? I completely agree with that. Because it's just hot and humid and gross. Even if you want to be able to go to the beach and things like that, if we just shifted things, there are much nicer times in the year. Late spring and early autumn are much nicer to go to the beach, in my opinion.
It's true, especially if you are, as I am, okay with cold water swimming. Cold water swimming is, I want to do more of it this year, actually. I have a friend, you should follow her on Instagram. It's Swim Away the Pain. And it's my friend Karen. And Karen has, I'm not going to pronounce this properly. It's EDS, which is Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, I believe. It's a syndrome that deals with connectivity tissue issues. Hmm. So she has constant, and she has fibromyalgia. So she has constant bone and joint and nerve pain. And she has been able to manage that pain in a significant way by doing cold water swimming all year long.
Oh, wow.
So she swims every day of the year in wild water whenever she can. She'll cut through the ice and go, and it's a full body ice bath. So it works for managing her pain. And she uses the Wim Hof breathing technique to control her body's reaction to the cold water and to acclimate to that sort of water. So she's invited me. We went swimming once this summer, but she's invited me to join her as the season gets colder, and I think I'm going to go for it. I know that this idea is just completely horrifying to you.
Oh, absolutely. We took a trip together to Canada.
I'm so glad you're going to bring this up.
And we went to this wonderful Nordic spa, and it was right on the river, so you could sit in the hot tubs and things like that, and you could look out on the river and see the ice going down the river. It was very freaking cold. This is February.
It was February. It was 5 degrees.
Yeah. So I am in the hot pools with Elia's husband.
Yep.
We're just hanging out, and she and Sir decide to go running into the fucking ice waterfall.
Not the river, but they have cold pools.
Yeah.
And so he and I were like, do you want to try the cold pools? We're like, yeah, I do. And our respective partners are like, you are fucking nuts. So we both did it. And I've done like polar plunge, but Karen like stays in the water. She just goes and submerges herself and does these 15-20 minute swims in all temperatures.
I like the cold. I much prefer the cold, but I like the cold when I can wear a nice woolen sweater. And it's my understanding that if you do that in the river, you drown.
Well, you know, you could wear wool and fleece, but yes, you would probably drown. That would be likely. You like the cold for its aesthetic, for the feeling of passing through between rooms of warmth to help you remind yourself about how nice the warmth is.
Definitely. And also just not having copious amounts of underboob sweat all the time.
Oh, that is the dream, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think winter is my favorite season. For a long time, I thought it was fall, but now I've come to the realization that as much as I like fall, I like it because it's no longer summer. And I like that it signals the impending arrival of winter. But fall in New England really is just a delightful time. And we're just leaning into that aesthetic. How do you feel about pumpkin spice?
I am a pumpkin spice bitch. Let me tell you, though, it doesn't belong in everything. So that's where I draw my line, is I love a good pumpkin spice latte. I love a good pumpkin spice baked good. But there are certain things that should not be pumpkin spice, like everything else. And I pride myself every year on finding the most bizarre and disgusting pumpkin spice thing that I can and sending a picture to your husband so that he can gag over it.
My husband is horrified by the infiltration of pumpkin spice into everything for the season. Now, you have plans to make your own pumpkin spice syrup, right?
I've made it.
You've made it. How did it? Tell me about this.
It is. It's good. I don't think it's as good as it could be. It still definitely needs some work. I preferred it more than Sir. It was a little too actual pumpkin-y for him, whereas I think he wants more. Because let's be honest, pumpkin spice is just like the warming spices you put into pumpkin pie. Cinnamon and clove and nutmeg and ginger, for the most part.
It's your standard apple pie spice seasoning blend.
Exactly. And that's more what he's looking for. He doesn't particularly care for the actual pumpkin flavor, which I like having the actual pumpkin flavor. I like the taste of pumpkin. It definitely needs a little more work, but it got the job done. It tastes good in coffee, I can tell you that much. But texture-wise, I think it needs a little bit more work.
Was it pumpkin-y? Like, was it clumpy?
It was a little clumpy, even after I strained it.
This is not so appealing. I'm sorry.
So we're gonna go back to the drawing board with it.
Do you make it with actual canned pumpkin?
You do make it with actual canned
pumpkin.
How
much canned pumpkin?
Not a lot.
But how much canned pumpkin did you buy?
Oh, funny you should ask. I decided this year that because I want to make various pumpkin things, not just pumpkin syrup, but I love making pumpkin bread. I've got a solid recipe for pumpkin bread and muffins and stuff. And also a really good pumpkin vodka sauce. We'll put it in the show notes. I bought cans of pumpkin because I figured I'll buy it now.
Cans, plural.
Cans.
We're not talking the tiny soup cans. These are like 20-ounce mega cans.
Yeah. I bought a couple of those because they disappear around like mid-October. People start buying them up for Thanksgiving. And
right.
Then you can't find them. Well, apparently I had the same idea last year. So I'm pretty sure I have somewhere in the ballpark of 4 or 5 32-ounce cans of pumpkin puree.
You can survive the apocalypse on pumpkin alone.
Yep, I have a Depression-era's grandmother worth of pumpkin puree.
Where are my pumpkin treats? You have brought nothing today. My hands are empty. My soul is bereft.
I will definitely be making pumpkin bread and bringing it for sure.
Thank you. I love pumpkin bread. We are all going to come out of the pandemic with depression era hoarding tendencies, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. I never really worried about having extra toilet paper until the last year. And now I make sure that we have an extra one on hand.
I just brought a case of it to the storage unit.
Yep.
Left over from early pandemic. It's not like it's going to go bad.
Well, exactly. That's it exactly. And I don't condone hoarding a whole bunch of shit.
No.
Because you
especially with the supply chain issues.
Yeah, you're a fucking garbage human if you're going out and buying like a pallet load of toilet paper that you're just going
to
hoard.
Yeah, if you're buying everything to the detriment of, we're not talking about buying extra for yourself. We're talking about buying out a store.
Yeah.
Or significantly depleting the stock. That's terrible.
Exactly. But I definitely do keep more canned goods on hand, baking supplies and things like that, than I ever did before. I really wasn't worried about it because in our apartment, we don't have a lot of pantry space.
Right.
So I didn't really typically buy a whole bunch of stuff because I had nowhere to put it. But we actually put a shelf in our hobby room in light of the pandemic that is now the extra canned goods shelf.
Right. And we put an entire 4-shelf Tupperware style shelving unit at the side of our dining room so that we could stock it up with cans and things. Because otherwise the counter becomes a shelf, and the counter is not a shelf.
No, especially not when you don't have a ton of counter space to begin with.
Right. I've found myself not stocking up necessarily as much on things just in case the store doesn't have them, but I've been keeping more impulse baking things on hand, like evaporated milk and condensed milk and the graham cracker crumbs to make a pie crust, more brown sugar, dry milk, things that I wouldn't always have on hand in quite these quantities. But if I want to make something, it's going to be the one item that I don't have on hand. Yeah. So I've been trying to just buy those and keep them.
Well, the nice thing too is with stuff like that, it doesn't really, it takes a long time to go bad.
Right. And I just have to, you know, use it, unfortunately, to make some sort of tasty baked good.
Yeah, I mean, you have to.
Gotta make the sacrifice.
It. Yep.
We're getting into baking season.
Oh, big time.
I mean, it's always baking season in some ways, but baking in the fall and the winter feels different.
Yeah, it's different.
Something about taking all day with a bread. This used to be my tradition on snow days, because I'm a teacher in my other life, so I do get snow days. And when there was a snow day, I would always bake bread. It just takes the whole day.
Yep, it's really nice. I'm possibly going apple picking next weekend.
Oh.
It's still up in the air. It hasn't been decided yet. But we're in apple season. And I tried to kind of not make a whole bunch of apple stuff leading up to apple picking season. And then I just fucking go ham. So I will probably have tons of apples to bake with starting next weekend, and I will be baking all sorts of cranberry apple casseroles and apple butter and my favorite, which is it's a recipe I found for an apple cinnamon roll with bourbon caramel sauce.
Oh, that sounds great.
Oh yeah, they're awesome. They use up no apples for go apple picking, because you know you want recipes that are going to use up some of these millions of apples you have. This ain't it.
No,
it uses like two apples.
It's just tasty,
but it's so good.
I've mastered a pie. I do tend to switch around my pie crust recipes every so often, but I have a solid technique, and I know how to make like the rest of the apple pie with no recipe. I invested a couple years back in one of those fancy apple machines that peels it and slices it and cores it for you. And that was a life changer, just a game changer when you're taking care of 7 apples for a pie.
Oh yeah, just peeling alone. Peeling alone in and of itself would be, oh, amazing.
It's such a pain in the ass. So that's a worthwhile investment if you bake apple things. I do tend to like apple crisp also, mm-hmm. but a pie just has this elegance to it. It looks very impressive, so always love making a couple of pies during the season.
Definitely. And we have a lot of Macintosh around here. That's one of the big ones around here. What are your favorite apples to pick?
Well, if I'm going to make a pie, I tend to go with Empires quite a bit, because Empires grow really everywhere. And I like a good Cortland, also some Braeburn. But I think if I hit apple season a little later in the season, often Empires are all that's left. Mm. And I think they make a great pie. I'll occasionally mix in a Granny Smith or two if I can for some tartness. I think any apples can make a good pie. You just have to balance the other stuff you put in the pie based on what type of apples you have.
Definitely. We've always been a big Macintosh household. It's not as firm as some of the other apples. If you have particular favorites, it's more tart. And it's not as firm, which is one of the reasons I like it for especially things like crisps or apple butters, because they just kind of melt very nicely. And you pair them with a firmer apple and you've got yourself a good pie or crisp.
There are a lot of people listening to this who are not really conscious of how many types of apple varieties there are.
Oh, I have a thing about this. I was recently listening to the Taste podcast, which is affiliated with America's Test Kitchen. There was an episode where they were talking to a gentleman who lives down in North Carolina, and I think he's in his like 80s or something. And what he does as a hobby is he goes around and he rediscovers apples that are disappearing, like local varieties of apples that people have heard about that aren't being cultivated and are in danger of just disappearing entirely. So there are crazy amounts of apples that we haven't even heard of that are all these hybrids of different types of apples that are like legendary in certain areas. Like, so he'll go into a place and be like, hey, you know of any unusual local apples around here? And people will tell him like, oh, there used to be orchards, you know. So he hunts down all these like apples that are going to be going extinct and taking cuttings of them so that they can be grafted and they won't like disappear entirely.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
I love that. Apples cross-pollinate like crazy. So you get so many easy hybrids just right away. And we're in an area that is just full of orchards. You can just throw a stick and hit one.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to pick your own apples this time of year, where we are in Western Massachusetts, we could probably, what are there, likely 30 or so orchards within driving distance?
I would say something like that.
Yeah, that's really nice. Last year I made boiled cider, which was delicious, but we didn't use it like in time, and you can keep it for a long time, but ours, like, I don't know if we got a little sketchy, a little moldy.
Yeah.
It's not something you want to take.
I purchased mine, so I think it's probably...
Yours is fine.
Yeah. Yep.
But boiled cider is really fun to make. It takes the entire day, and you really should make at least 1 gallon of it at a time. Well, you start with 1 gallon of apple cider, and then you boil it until it's down to like a concentrate. And it makes a syrup, and it's like an apple syrup, like the way you would have any other type of maple syrup or caramel syrup even. And then you can add it to your pies. It's a highly spiced, sweet, delicious, really strong flavored.
It's a game changer for apple baking. A tiny bit of that amps up anything you're baking with apples.
It's also the key ingredient in King Arthur Baking's apple cider caramels, which I made last year, and I fucking loved them, but I'm like the only person in my circle who loved them as much as I love them.
They were really good though.
It's hard to get rid of them. There's a ton of them. Now that I'm back in school, I could probably pawn them off one of my students really easily.
Yep.
But they taste like, I don't know if this is regional or if everybody has these, they're a Halloween lollipop that is a caramel apple pop.
Yep.
So it's like a green round apple-shaped lollipop that has a caramel sauce over it. And you know, eat that and it's delicious. And the caramels taste like that. They have that apple flavor.
They definitely do. Before we detour too far away from apples cross-pollinating and types of apples, because I know that's what you guys tune in for, can we talk about Red Delicious?
It's one truth and one lie.
It's true. Because they were bred to be the most enticing looking apple, but I'd rather eat wax fruit.
Even at peak ripeness, they're mealy, right?
Yeah.
They just have a mealy consistency. They look good in the grocery store shelves. I imagine they're probably really hardy.
Probably. I mean, they probably last forever, but I feel like you would get just as much out of walking into Pier 1 Imports and taking a bite out of a styrofoam fruit.
Strong feelings, strong apple discourse today.
They're everywhere.
It's true. And they're cheap.
Yeah.
But that's all they're worth.
Yeah.
You could probably put them in a pie.
Why though?
Yeah,
They're not going to make it better.
No.
They're just going to be filling.
They are the zucchini of apples. Have I shared my horrible opinions of zucchini? My opinions are top notch, but zucchini is a garbage vegetable. And I will stand by this. This is the hill I will die on. When the best thing you can say about a vegetable is you can't taste it in this recipe, that is not a ringing endorsement. Every time someone's like, I made this zucchini bread, it's delicious. You can't even taste the zucchini. You know, you could have left the zucchini out.
It's true. You could have just had the bread.
Right. You could have made this with bananas or apples or probably anything else. And people who turn them into noodles.
Why do you hate yourself so much?
It's not a noodle. I know folks have various sensitivities to food. And I understand if that's the best you can get.
But science has done so much better when it comes to people who have intolerances. Why do that to yourself still?
Also, everyone grows it because it's easy to grow and you get to feel like a successful gardener.
Oh, yeah.
But then you're pawning it off on everyone nearby.
We have several people in our school. We have several teachers who are big gardeners. And around zucchini season, I just stay out of the teacher's dining room because I know there's just going to be bushels of fucking zucchini that people are going to be like, take the zucchini. I don't want your goddamn zucchini.
It's okay to break the cycle. You can just not plant any zucchini.
Once you've opened that door, I don't think you can come back from it. I think you just have zucchini for the rest of your life, and it is what it is.
It's a terrible garbage vegetable. Don't grow it next year. Grow something better.
Like pumpkins.
I saw this thing on Facebook. It is about vertical gardening. And it's this woman who set up this like whole arched trellis hallway, beautiful outside for vertical gardening. Because there's so many plants that are like vining plants.
Oh, yeah.
That you can get to grow into this gorgeous shape. And it's in many ways, it's better for the plants. They don't rot against the dirt.
You keep them away from certain type of pests.
Exactly. Well, the example they used was pumpkins. She grew a death tunnel of pumpkins. The notes in the post say, like, make sure it's only tiny sugar pumpkins and other varieties of gourds. How can you control for this? Gourds and pumpkins cross-pollinate also, like, oh, yeah. Crazy. I'm just imagining that you accidentally get some monster pumpkins and you have this beautiful overarching trellis filled with giant wrecking balls of doom hanging tenuously on these vines, just waiting for you to pass under them before it crashes down upon you in a pulp-filled death.
That would be the most appropriate death that I could ever have.
That's a warrior's death for basic bitches.
Yep. Send me to Valhalla with a pumpkin spice latte and a giant fucking gourd to the dome.
As I was looking at this post, there are so many other crops you could have used for this example.
Oh, yeah, many other crops.
Why did you pick one that's renowned for being giant?
I mean, you could have done beans. You could have done cucumbers.
Even cucumbers, yes. They at least are not going to grow large enough to brain you. They'll hang like wind chimes. Like giant flaccid dicks swaying in the wind.
I just would like to see how long that tunnel actually stood. Like how long before the combined weight of all of the gourds and pumpkins just tore it asunder.
Can you imagine going on a pick-your-own-pumpkin adventure with your small children in the tunnel?
Oh, God.
Any child who survives the tunnel gets a free hayride.
Well, did I ever tell you the rules surrounding pumpkin picking in our family?
No.
If you can get it out of the pumpkin patch yourself, you can have it. Which is a very dangerous thing to tell kids like my sister and I.
Did you team up on the biggest pumpkin you could find?
Oh, absolutely. We managed to get some truly insane pumpkins out of the pumpkin patch. I can only imagine they must be some of my dad's favorite memories, just watching a struggle to get gourds like bigger than us out of the pumpkin patch. We rolled them, you know, anything you could possibly come up with to get them out of the patch. And it's still, to this day, that's our family rule. Every time we go pumpkin picking is if you can get it out of the patch yourself, you can keep it. Well, let me tell you, I can get some big pumpkins out of the patch now.
is this your future weightlifting regime with that as a goal?
If that was actually an option for me to just use that as a fitness regimen, I would be buff as shit.
It's too bad that you are working in a job where you have to be, you know, working all day and can't be volunteering out in the fields harvesting and collecting pumpkins.
Right?
I think that's our innate call to our agricultural backgrounds.
Yep. Just get me out in the field slinging gourds all day long.
I want you to get a business card that says Kismet Scribbles, professional gourd slinger.
Yes.
I think you should draw that.
I think so too.
Are you doing any art projects lately?
I've been doing a lot of embroidery lately, but with October coming up, I am looking at doing Inktober again. I'm not sure how much of Inktober I'm going to try to do this year. I think I might try to keep it a little more chill and maybe do like a couple days a week instead of really trying to hit all the prompts, because that's just as very stressful when you've got two jobs.
For people who are new to the podcast or who are unfamiliar with it, tell us about what Inktober is.
Inktober is a drawing challenge. Through the month of October, you are supposed to use pen and ink to do it, but a lot of people do digital art or, you know, pencil, all sorts of different things. There's an official prompt list that goes out every year, and you try to do a drawing per day, every day in October. And the prompt list is officially out. It's a good list. However, when you consider that this particular drawing challenge is very big on things like Instagram and Tumblr and DeviantArt, could you take a look at number four for me?
Not. K-N-O-T. Not. Well, that's just gonna be a sailing ship. Right? There's no way anyone would draw really explicit nodding furry porn for that, would they?
I would highly recommend if this message reaches you in time, just get off the internet on October 4th. If that's your bag, if you want to see extremely elaborate nodding furry porn, then by all means, hang out on all of the art websites.
I was going to say the exact opposite. What I was going to say is, at the time this is posting, the 4th of October will have already passed.
Oh, no.
So you should go and see what people have drawn, because the internet is dark and full of terrors.
Yeah, that was the first thing I noticed when I looked at that list.
Clearly, I thought that immediately. And, you know, more power to you. I've known a number of furries. We're mutuals on Twitter. And everyone's been super nice. I love talking to them. It's not my particular bag, but I get it. Also.
Oh, yeah. I completely understand. And there definitely was a period of time in high school when I could have headed in that direction
easily. Me too, definitely. I could really see where a few key directions would have led me down that path. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, they seem to be lovely people. Everyone that I've ever talked to that enjoys it or, you know, takes part in that community has been absolutely lovely.
I've heard they're really respectful and polite at cons. I also have heard that they are very gracious with artists that they work with to commission art. I also think that Fursona is an excellent alternative to Patronus for folks like me who used to use Patronus as an alternative to spirit animal.
Yep.
Once I understood how appropriative the phrase spirit animal is.
Yeah, definitely.
But now that J.K. Rowling is more publicly known as a trash fire, Fursona is a great alternative.
Yeah. And if we have furry listeners to our podcast, which I really would not be surprised about at
all. No, not at all.
Send us some mail. Let me know if you'd be interested in commissioning some furry stuff, because maybe that'll actually get a commissions page up. You never
yeah,
know.
I've been trying to get Kismet to put a commissions page up on her website for years, and she still hasn't done it because the art she does is so good. And I'm like, you know, you should really draw stuff for the furry community because you draw adorable characters, you draw adorable animals, and folks would, I'm sure, love your art.
Well, maybe the furry community will hasten the creation of my my doing commissions.
Yeah, this is a chicken and egg situation where maybe the art won't come until you get commissions, but how are people going to commission you until you've got some art?
It's true.
We're working on it.
Truly a conundrum.
I know there's some controversy around Inktober because of the person who started it, like copywriting things or trademarking phrases.
Yeah, it was a whole big thing last year, and I almost didn't end up doing Inktober because of it, but I did end up doing it because I don't get anything monetary from doing it. I don't have a big enough following as yet to really feel like it was going to be a huge detriment. But I guess there was an Inktober book published, and it was like a drawing tutorial sort of book. There was another artist who said that a lot of the tutorials and examples were lifted from their work.
Oh.
But there was also a lot of people who were coming to bat saying, hey, look, there's only so many different ways that you can teach someone how to crosshatch or how to, you know, shade and things. I don't really know where things came down on that. It's still a little up in the air in terms of how I feel about doing it, especially if I had a larger platform. I might look for something different.
Well, have I got a suggestion for you? So for a couple of years now, I have subscribed to AI Weirdness, which is a newsletter and Tumblr blog run by Janelle Shane. And Janelle Shane is an AI programmer for artificial intelligence. So for a few years now, Janelle has done Bottober. I think Janelle uses she, her pronouns. I'm not entirely sure I'm going based on the name. If I misgender you, Janelle, I'm so sorry. But she puts out neural net generated prompts. And so you're getting, I'm getting your cold reaction to this because I have not shared this with you in the past. I've been waiting for this podcast. So here is the Bottober list from DaVinci, which is one of the larger neural net collections on animals. So these are animals. There's 31. Okay. I'm going to read them all to you. Opossumsaurus. Rainbow space walrus.
Yes.
The roars of roosters. Slugalope. Adventurous stone chickens.
Isn't that just a cockatrice?
Frickin' whale, with whale all in capitals. 4D stegosaurus. Eight-legged cat. Bear lionaire. Or it looks like bear-lionaire. Like it was millionaire, but mill has been replaced by bear.
But bear instead.
Bear-lionaire. Impossibly cute pudgy birds.
Aww.
Muppet sharks. Oh, fluffy space lemur. Tiny shelled horses. Angry jelly donut. Roaring ball of feathers. Butter gliders.
Oh.
Dangerous swans. That's just any swan.
Yeah.
Gleaming toads. Oh. Worm that ate Chicago.
What?
Teeter-totter rattlesnake. Loud frilly cows. Way too much cat. Steampunk platypus. Heavenly caterpillar. Elderly robot pug.
Oh.
Six-legged wombat quail.
What?
Angry yohippuses. Firefly squid. Porcelain squirrel. Fabled unicycle beavers. And god cockroach.
That last one is just terrifying sounding.
There are multiple other Bottober lists, including a Halloween-themed one that includes highlights like spiderwebs grow luscious on wet pumpkin grins, and this town is filled with orange dust. But they have a number of various themes, and so if you are looking for an Inktober alternative...
I might be.
Might I suggest you take on one of the Bottober examples?
Oh, that first list, just the brain is churning.
I know you're
just
picturing
so many.
Opossumsaurus and the worm that ate Chicago as various options.
I'm also trying to determine what frickin' whale!
Frickin' whale! It's a frickin' whale!
That... Oh, yes, please send that to me.
I'm emailing it to you right now.
Oh, I really like that.
Thank you for doing the world a service, Bottober.
Oh, absolutely. I love all the AI bot-generated stuff, like the bot-generated commercials.
Yes, I know a lot of them are fake, but I don't care. I still love them.
The Olive Garden one?
Yes. Everything is breadsticks. Your mouth is full of secret soup.
The cheese continues. It fills the room. There are no survivors. Something like that.
It's like how much I love when people do like location gothic, where it's specifics to your area, but the real eldritch and weird and liminal spaces of your area.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's good stuff. Well, please make sure that you're following Kismet Scribbles on Instagram. That's Kismet with a Y, so that you can see if she does any Inktober or Bottober drawings, and you can enjoy those because they're really delightful.
Yep, this is the season when I actually draw stuff.
Oh, that's nice. This is one of the seasons where I actually write stuff. It's going to be National Novel Writing Month in November, and for the first time in 20 years, I'm not signing up. Now, there's a fat old asterisk attached to that because I'm writing a book right now, and I did tell my agent that I could have a delivery date of December 1st, which means I am going to be writing during the month of November. And I'm probably going to be writing 50,000 words in November, but I'm not going to sign up. I'm not going to be beholden to it. I did 20 years. I won for 20 years, and I'm not going to do it anymore. My upholder self from the four tendencies is saying no to something. That's hard.
I think it's enough that you have the book to turn around without adding the extra stress to that as well. On top of just life stuff. I think it's fair to not sign up this year.
Thank you. Fucking life stuff. We're maybe gonna buy a house. We're looking at houses. That's a whole thing. People do this. People, like, they move. They buy houses and move into them.
Do they? As an eldritch millennial, I'm not so sure.
Oh, I feel terrible about that now.
No, you shouldn't. I can't wait to help you decorate it and help you set everything up. And...
good. I'm just going to hire you and be like, I'm going to give you a budget and just send you out to stores, or I'll go with you because I like it. And you just advise me on what I should get and help me decorate.
And then we're going to go back and we're going to drink and we're going to decorate your house.
Oh my gosh. We can't drink too much because I do have to live there. I live in a condo now. It's nice, but we've outgrown it. And so I want something with a yard, something where I can have a little fire pit and a basement.
Hobby space.
Hobby space, yes. I looked at a really cute house today, but it was a little too small. It was about the same size as the condo. It felt more like a lateral move versus moving into something bigger. And that was a bummer.
Yeah. But you haven't looked at too many of them so far.
No.
So the search is young and...
and full of terrors.
Full of terrors. I mean, yeah.
It's in that season right now. I think this is the season for scariness, right? For doing things that are scary.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe that's why none of us can get tattoo appointments.
Yeah, which is truly terrifying.
Because everybody's now getting tattoos after making it through the pandemic this far, and folks have... been tired of putting off things they've been putting off.
Yeah, I suspect they're also busy trying to get their regulars back in, or people who had unfinished work and things like that too. So they're probably booked pretty far out because of that. But yeah, trying to get a goddamn tattoo appointment.
With an artist that we want.
Yes, exactly.
So we're constantly trolling various local artists' Instagram pages and then sending emails, and because we each have work we want done.
Yeah, lots of work. More work than I can afford right now.
Oh, it's such a thing to spend money on, though. It's so good.
It is. I was thinking about it.
That permanent art. I really like getting tattooed. I've written about this on the blog before. I hope I will continue to like it when I get my next tattoo.
It'll be interesting when I get my next tattoo, because that's never really been a thing for me. Like, they don't really bother me very much. I don't find them to be exceedingly painful. I mean, there's definitely times, don't get me wrong. Like, if someone tells you it doesn't hurt at all, they're fucking lying to you. I mean, someone's drawing into your skin.
It's more the nature of the pain than the fact that it is pain.
Yeah, and I apparently have gotten, like, one of the shittier spots tattooed without even realizing it, because I got my foot tattooed. And I also have, like, the worst part of it on my tendon of my foot.
Yeah, you made some bad choices there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a cute tattoo, though.
It is very cute. It's well worth it. But yeah, the lightest part of that tattoo was right on the tendon of my foot.
Ugh.
So I was just babbling like a fucking idiot the entire time that, you know, just talking to not pay attention to it. But it'll be interesting when I get my next one, because my tattoos are kind of pre-BDSM practice. Right.
So you have a different paradigm and framework in which to contextualize that type of pain?
Exactly. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see if I have a different reaction to it now than I did back then.
Yeah, I definitely didn't find it arousing, but I found it captivating. I just sat there generally quietly and found the sensation really meditative. Because yeah. It was, I mean, the actual tattooing was about 5 hours of tattooing mm-hmm. over a period of about 7 hours. Because I took a break, we ordered food, there's all the drawing and such that happens before then.
Yeah.
The idea that I was just sitting there for ultimately 7 hours, I can't even think, like, it just passes by.
Yep.
It wasn't until the last 45 minutes where it got, like, really much more unpleasant than interesting. And it was when he was doing all the white highlights.
Oh, the white sucks.
And so I keep telling him, I'm like, I think it's done. And he's like, it's not done. I'm like, it looks pretty done to me. He's like, shut up, it's not done. Like, you don't need all that. That's pretty good. It's all done.
Yeah, and you can't rush work like that either. No. That's the thing. Like, it's just gonna take how long it takes.
It takes what it takes.
That's the only part that I'm, like, concerned with the piece I want to get.
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna get a fairly sizable thigh piece,
right.
I think.
That's a multiple session one. Because you're doing color, right?
Only a little bit.
They might be able to do it all in one session. I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I really only want a couple of accent colors, but mm-hmm. it's going to be predominantly black and white.
Mm. I've been saving my writing arm, my forearm of my right arm for a writing-inspired tattoo. And I have some ideas, but I really want an artist to design something. And that's been hard to manage at this time because I don't have an existing relationship with an artist who has a particular style for this type of tattoo that I want.
Yep.
The guy who did my other tattoos is phenomenal, but he does much more organic and real life things as opposed to something machinery based. So we'll see what that ends up with. So yeah, a lot of people are scared of tattoos. Don't be scared. Even if you find the pain really unpleasant, it's temporary. But you seek out scary things for fun because you're, I think, a little fucked up. And you've been playing, because you've been playing a game, right? You've been playing Phasmophobia.
I have been. Phasmophobia has been out for a year now. They actually just celebrated their 1 year anniversary. It's really fun. It's a ghost hunting game where you go on investigations. And the goal is to try to identify what type of ghost is haunting the location. And you do that by using different types of equipment. You've got, like, EVPs, cameras, spirit boxes, UV lights, all these different types of equipment that pick up different sorts of evidence of the ghost. And that helps you narrow down from, I don't know if it's like 10 different types or something. There's like 10 different types of ghosts that it could possibly be. And they only show up on certain types of equipment. So that's how you narrow it down to what ghost it is. So you're wandering around. They have levels that are houses. They have one that's a prison, an asylum, and a high school. It's a co-op game. You can play it solo, but usually you've got up to 4 people.
I need to stop for a minute because I like that in the realm of things that folks would find terrifying, you have prison, asylum, high school.
Yep.
That seems just totally, totally appropriate. Yeah,
yeah.
Carry on. So,
well, I mean,
co-op.
Absolutely terrifying locations. So it's up to 4-person co-op. Some of the bigger locations, like the high school, you really want more people in order to canvas the area better. But you walk through with the different equipment. As you're doing it, you have a sanity meter, and your sanity meter goes down with certain ghost interactions, and, like, if you don't turn on all the lights in the house, your sanity drops faster.
Or if you spend a long enough time in high school.
Yeah, exactly. You end up like us, folks. So once your sanity meter reaches a certain point, the ghost stops just doing like knocks and maybe, you know, throwing stuff and making some noises and things, and it can go into hunt mode, where the ghost is actively hunting you, trying to kill you.
This reminds me a little bit of the way in Don't Starve, you have to monitor your sanity. Otherwise, the creatures that come out in the night will come in and can actually kill you.
Yeah, it's very much like that. It's kind of strategic in the sense that you have to know the best order to be able to do some of the equipment in. Once you get a hit on certain types of equipment, you can kind of narrow down what you think it might be, and then you can choose to go in with other equipment that would help narrow it down even further. And you're trying to do all of this without getting so low in your sanity meter that you trigger a hunt before you figure out what the ghost is. There's also secondary objectives, like you can have it try to get it to blow out a candle, or try to get it to walk through piles of salt, or all these different things. But it is really fun. It's a little jump scary, which is why I haven't asked you to play it.
Nope.
Because I know you're not one with the jump scares. But it's also just very eerie, especially if some of the ghosts require you to be alone in order for certain things to trigger, like be able to get certain types of stuff on the spirit box. When you are inside the house all by yourself and shit's being knocked over and you hear talking in another room, it's turning on faucets and you don't know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen, it definitely gets really freaky. And the very first thing I played was the tutorial. I go into the house and I'm doing my ghost hunting thing and I'm following along all the prompts that it tells you to do. Like, okay, go use this equipment and go use that equipment. And of course, I have to go down into the basement. So I'm down there in the basement and I've got my, you know, spirit box, and this fucking shadow figure with a scythe just apparition just manifests in front of me in the dark basement while I have my lights off because I'm using the spirit box. I literally screamed loud enough for Sir to hear me in the other room and took off. I just like ran my ass out of that house directly back to the surveillance van, because apparently I'm a very good ghost hunter like that.
Well, you found it.
I did. I absolutely found it. And he came out and he's like, what is going on? What's up? Apparently he had also been doing the tutorial. Ghost didn't show up for him. Ghost was in the fucking living room and he never even saw it. I'm like, I had to go down to the fucking basement and this thing came at me with a scythe. Of course I'm going to run up out of this house. I'm a bad ghost hunter, but I've got very good survival skills.
Yeah, you would make it out of that horror movie.
Oh, for sure. I have the makings of a last girl, I think. Not to toot my own horn, but...
No, I think so. I think so. You're not slutty enough to be killed right away.
No, and I'm the person that would be like, why are you gonna go in there? Okay, there was a sound. Yeah, no, we're not gonna go look.
I'm not gonna do that. We're just gonna leave. Is that an option? Where you're just like, I don't want this mission.
I want a movie like that.
Good luck, ghosts.
Yeah. Yep. Peace out. No, there have been times. There's been times that we've run, we've got about 20 hours in it at this point. And there's been a few matches where the ghost is just being a pain in the ass and not showing up on any of the equipment. And our sanity got low enough that we're just like, you know what? Fuck you then. We're just going to take a guess at what it is and we're leaving. But it's an incredibly fun game, especially with additional people. We've got Sir's sisters playing with us. You can play with randos. I just don't like playing with randos.
It must be really fun if you're on like Discord voice chat or something with people and you get to laugh about like, oh my God, what was that? What was that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's also just really creepy too, because when it starts hunting, if you're out in the van, you're fine, but you see all of the cameras go fuzzy and then you just get radio static. Like, you can't talk to the people anymore. So there's been times when, you know, they've been inside and I've been out in the van and it's just like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, there's nothing going on, because it locks all the doors and it locks you in the building. So you have to either get out before it locks the doors, or you have to go hide somewhere. and turn off your light, turn off all your equipment, and just, like, hide in a fucking closet until the hunt passes.
Can you, do you kill them? Is that what you're supposed to do?
No, you don't. The main goal is to identify them. You basically have to wait out a hunt.
So you're just a fucking researcher. You're like a poor grad student trying to do, like, just classifying these ghosts.
Oh, yeah. And most of the hunts that you start with, you get, like, $50. Like, you're not making bank on this, and you have to buy your own equipment. Very realistic to people who are hobbyists.
It's the most realistic game of this. You have to spend all of your income on equipment. Nobody takes you seriously. You don't even get to win at the end, and you're constantly losing sanity.
Yeah.
That's a pandemic mood right
there. It's just a sim.
In another example of just how different our gaming platforms are, I've been playing this game called Islanders on the Switch. Islanders is something a friend of mine mentioned to me a couple weeks ago. I guess it's really popular, but I'm always late to the game, so I never know of anything that's really popular. And it's a really fun, very quiet, thoughtful puzzle game where you've got this little island, and it's random every time, and it gives you, like, this or that. And so you're going to choose which thing you're going to build. So it'll say, do you want to start with a field or a seaweed farm? And you pick which one, and there's no, like, right or wrong answers. They just give you different things you build. And you're trying to earn different thresholds of points to get you to unlock the next stuff. So where you place items gives you points. So certain items, they all interact with each other. So you'll get extra points if it's near this other feature, but it loses points if it's near this other one. So you're trying to strategize, but the game is always different because it gives you the different packs of things to build in different orders.
Okay.
So you can't just assume, I'm going to save this spot for this, because you might not get that until a little bit later on.
Gotcha.
And then after you get a certain amount of points at one island, you go on expedition mode and it keeps your points, but starts you on a new island with new things, and you just try and get a high score. So it's very contemplative, and I find it fairly low stress, but this is really a case where you have to know your personality type, because my friend who recommended it to me has been obsessively watching tutorial videos and strategy guides. So if that's you, great, more power to you, but know that this will probably not be a low stress, chill game for you the way it is for me. I'm like, oh well, not enough points, time to start over.
There's definitely two types of gamers when it comes to that sort of stuff. The ones who just want to just play and see where the game takes you. I am that sort of person, which is why I almost always end up restarting my, not so much Stardew Valley, but like Harvest Moon, Story of Seasons games. I get halfway through a season, then I'm like, ah, fuck, I probably should have done all these things in a different order. Whereas Sir has already, before he even purchases the game, has gone online to determine exactly what the best way to do things will be.
Both valid. This makes me want to play Don't Starve again. It's probably one of my all-time favorite games. I just fucking love it. I love, like, beginning to mid-game of Don't Starve. I don't know that I've ever... Have I ever lived a full year... I think I have. I think I've made it a full year. There is an end game with Don't Starve, but mostly it's just how long can you live? Because something will kill you eventually. And it's always permadeath.
Yeah.
Like, you just know that once it's done, everything you've built is gone. So yeah, there are these touchstones that you can activate throughout the game, and when you die, you get resurrected there, but all your shit is wherever you died.
Yeah, and good luck getting back to it.
Yeah, you might be really far from it. But I love the early to mid game. I love setting up my base. It's just my desire to homestead again. Just like build my little fire pit and set up my little crock pot and get all my food stored away. I just really enjoy the game. I love Don't Starve Together, but I haven't played it in a while because getting the times lined up with somebody else to play is always really fun.
We should make some time to play it. I have not played a whole lot of Don't Starve. I've played a decent amount, but I just tend to die a lot, so.
Right. And you do die a lot in Don't Starve. But it's that same idea that oftentimes when I'm restarting, I'll just start a new level rather than continue with one that I've built, because it's more fun as I'm strategizing where I'm going to settle and being near the beefalo and all of that stuff.
I found that frequently with games like that. Every once in a while, I just get the urge to pick up Stardew Valley again. It's just one of those comfort media games for me. But every time I do, I just tend to start a whole new save, rather than keep on playing on a save that I've already made, just because the beginning portion is very rewarding and I find it very comfy and very fun to just start your farm from scratch again, even if I do have a ton of hours into it. That's why I'll never have one of those crazy huge farms like you see online with people having everything maximized and crazy production, because it's the early parts that are fun to me.
We should talk a little bit about something sex or sex toy adjacent, because we've gone several episodes without a lot of it. One thing that I want to start, I have no idea if people will be interested in this. I think it's a little bit fucked up, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. All right, so as a sex toy reviewer, I have a lot of sex toys that I don't ever really want to use again. Not because they're bad, just because I have so many choices and I tend to stick with just the best of the best. So I have toys that are used, they're not brand new, but you know, they're clean and I have all the parts for them and they're worth sometimes anywhere between $50 to hundreds of dollars, and I don't want to throw them out. And you can't recycle them. And I have a limited number of friends to whom I can give sex toys. They are all getting to the point where they have too many of the same things. So I was thinking about starting a newsletter, an opt-in newsletter for like the sex toy adoption service, the sex toy rehoming service. So if you would be willing to take a sex toy that has been cleaned and UV sanitized, but is used for just the cost of shipping, you could sign up for the newsletter. And then when I've got a collection, I would just like send out the newsletter to those people and you write back to me and say what you want. And then you send me the shipping on PayPal or Venmo or whatever, and I send you the sex toy. What do you think?
It sounds so weird, even though it's... No, like they, like I have been on the receiving end of sex toys that, yep, you know, when the great cullings have occurred.
Yep, the annual or biannual culling.
And yeah, I mean, they're cleaned and sanitized and everything. And you're right. You really have no, other than throwing them away, you have no venue to get rid of them.
Nobody recycles them around here.
Yeah. So... Yeah, I mean, as long as people go in, like, with all the info.
Right, and I don't want this to be like people buying used panties on the internet. Like, you can't opt to have it not cleaned. This is not that kind of service. Like, I'm gonna clean it, and I'm gonna sanitize it.
Start a vending machine.
Oh, gosh. Because that's the other part. I don't want people... You know, I don't want those people
to
join my newsletter. I'd have to call them out. But I have like a lot of Twitter followers. I'm sure there are a lot of people who'd like really high-end sex toys that they only have to pay shipping for.
Well, yeah, and you get a lot of really good quality stuff is the thing. You're right. Not getting shit junk brands.
No.
So, but you can only have so many of a similar thing.
Right.
Like how many clit suckers do you need?
Well, 5 or 6 probably, but not 20.
No, definitely not 20.
I only have one clit, people, to rule them all.
So yeah, like, at first glance, it sounds so like,
sketchy and weird.
So skeevy. But like, no, I get it. I definitely get it.
So, all right, if this appeals to you, take a look at my Twitter and hopefully I'll have tweeted something about it. By the time this comes out, I'll probably put a Google form in and then add people to a MailerLite newsletter just for that. I don't think it's breaking any agreements. I'm not interested in making any money. Like, I'm not, I receive them for free. I'm not going to sell them. I just don't want to pay shipping.
Yeah. As long as it's only shipping, I don't think that's.
I just need to get a bunch of those postage prepaid, like those priority mail flat rate boxes from USPS.
Are we going to be one of those podcasts that starts talking about stamps.com?
Oh my gosh, stamps.com. I can't hear stamps.com without thinking of the Welcome to Night Vale stamps.com clip.
I don't think I heard that
one. I'm going to put it in the show notes. It's probably my favorite fake ad on Welcome to Night Vale ever. And it still makes me laugh. I remember listening to it. Welcome to Night Vale is one of those podcasts that I used to sometimes put on when I had road trips with students because it was generally appropriate but really fun.
Yep.
And I like how I say appropriate but really fun. And I remember being in a van full of students and that stamps.com ad came on and everybody just fell silent. And some kid behind me is like, "What the hell was that?" Once we're done recording, I'll play it for you. And folks, I'm going to find it and put it in the show notes so you can enjoy it as well. But yeah, we don't have any sponsors. We're doing all this for free.
You get all this great content.
Stellar content for free. At some point, we'll probably set up a Patreon.
But yeah.
We haven't yet.
We should probably make sure that we're going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And not just have another hiatus.
Another 3 years where we put out one episode in the middle. Yeah, maybe we should set a goal that if we're still releasing regularly by the new year, we'll do a podcast starting around, a Patreon starting around then.
Yeah.
That seems reasonable.
I think that's an achievable goal.
And that seems like a good place to wrap up for today. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. We hope you've enjoyed this tour into Basic Bitch Fall, as well as all sorts of other highlights. It's always lovely to have you join us on the podcast. Until next time,
stay geeky
and kinky. Come and Play Podcast was produced by Elia Winters. The hosts are Elia Winters and Kismet Scribbles. You can find more about Elia on eliawinters.com and find Kismet on Instagram. That's Kismet Scribbles, Kismet with a Y. Like the hosts, the theme music is So Easy. It's by Jazzar, and it's being used under a Creative Commons ShareAlike license. For more about Jazzar, check out betterwithmusic.com.